Jack?
Here.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Present.
Commissioner Ward?
Here.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Bence?
Present.
And Chairperson Moreno?
Here.
All present. Do I have a
motion?
Move
approval of the agenda.
Thank you.
Second.
We have a motion for approval of the agenda by Vice Chairperson Bence, seconded by Commissioner Sturdivant. Roll call, please. Vice Chairperson Bence?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Jack?
Yes.
Commissioner Colamarino?
Yes.
Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. This portion of the meeting is public comment and reserved for persons wishing to address the commission on any matter on this agenda that is not on this agenda and over which the commission has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes. Please state your name and address for the record before making your presentation, and the commission may take action to direct staff to place the matter on an agenda for future business. Does anyone from the public wish to speak now?
My name is Alana Reynolds. I don't use these that often. I've been in Atascadero living for 18 years, and I'm here because I purchased a home in Atascadero at 9903 West Front 3 years ago. 1 year ago, it was brought to my attention that the second dwelling was not permitted. So I have been attempting to work with the city, planning, zoning, et cetera, for the last year. What I would like to share as part of my experience of, number one, I purchased this home as an investment, which we all know that's kind of decreased, but I purchased it because I knew I could rent out the units and cover my mortgage. I've been attempting to work with the city. There's more covered patio than is allowed because the city is calling it an accessory structure. If I remove it all, I end up with a house that's going to be a lot hotter inside in the summer because it's taking away the shaded area. If I put trees there for shade, I then am planting trees within 10 feet of the home, which is not a good fire safety. I've been told I can pay $600 and pay for a variance to ask forgiveness or allowance to have some extra overhang, but at the same time I'm paying that money and the planning commission or staff can say no, which is we've already thrown enough money. I've thrown enough money at this property. We bought it for $450,000. I upgraded it about $50,000 with carpet, tile, new appliances, fixing it up, painting, making it a lot nicer home in the neighborhood. So what I'm hoping for is to be able to have the commission I'm led to believe I shouldn't have people individually come out and look at it, so I don't quite understand that, but I would like to be able to invite the staff out to look at it. I did bring pictures. May I pass these? Those show the back dwelling, and the awnings are very nicely made. That none of the big, powerful winds we've had have blown any of the awnings off. It's a very well-built structure. If I have to take it down, I obviously will. I've been dealing with this for a year, and I'm really burnt out on it, so I'd like to get some resolution with it and hopefully not be able to have to remove it. The other thing that I'd like to have considered for everybody in my position is a lessening of the fees. To make this place legal, it's going to cost about $20,000 in legal fees. At this point, I've lost a huge amount of money on the property. I want to keep it. I want to continue making my mortgage payment and not have a bank own a property. I would like to see what we need to do to create an amnesty program or something along those lines to give some homeowners a little bit of forgiveness on some of these fees.
Thank you, Ms. Reynolds.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else from the public wishing to speak right now? Seeing none, I will close the public comment. Director Frace, is this something you can address Ms. Reynolds' concern?
We've been working with Ms. Reynolds and her architect, John Rinaldi, on these issues. I met with them last week. They've turned in some revised plans. We're still trying to figure out what can be addressed at a staff level and what may need commission relief on some of the issues. Once we get the final square footage is based on what the architect just turned in, we'll be able to figure out what, if anything, needs to come before the commission, and then ultimately it would be the applicant's decision as to whether they'd want to come to the commission and ask for relief or modify the building. So it will be the applicant's decision one way or the other about how to proceed.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. I move on to the consent calendar.
Move approval.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Second.
Approval by Vice Chairperson Bence and second by Commissioner Sturdivant. Roll call, please. Vice Chairperson Bence?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Jack?
Yes.
Commissioner Colamarino?
Yes.
Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. And let's move on to our Community Development Staff Report.
I'd ask them to turn off their cell phone.
If anyone does have a cell phone here, if you could turn that on silent or vibrate, we'd appreciate that.
All right. Our first item tonight is a tree removal permit, and this is for 4755 San Anselmo Road. We're looking at a request to remove two live oak trees at 13 inches and 28 inches diameter, and this is in order to construct frontage improvements and a shared driveway for four new single-family homes. The project is located here on San Anselmo in the limited single-family X zone. To give you a little bit of background, the site is currently developed with one single-family house. A certificate of compliance was recently done, which showed that there's actually four underlying lots on this parcel. So there were two lots that were originally established as colony lots when the city was created, and then those lots were then split again prior to city incorporation. I believe it was around the 1940s, 1950s, and that was done by deed. So they did go through the process to do the certificate of compliance and show that they had all of the necessary documentation to show that they had the four legal buildable lots. The applicant is proposing this site plan, which will require some grading along the frontage and some grading for the shared driveway. Here you see the location of the two live oak trees that are proposed for removal. The arborist has looked at the trees and certified that they are both in poor condition. Here we see an aerial view of the site with the trees located at the property frontage. The applicant will be required to pay tree mitigation, which will include either replanting seven trees on site or payment of $341 to the tree fund. Staff has identified the this finding for the Planning Commissioners tonight, and staff is recommending that the Planning Commission approve the resolution as proposed. And that concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you, Callie. Does the Commission have any questions of staff? And let's see, do we have any ex parte on this issue? If anybody has any?
None.
Okay.
Can I make a motion?
Public comment.
Oh, sorry.
It's always coming. I'd like to now open this up to the public. Anyone wishing to speak on this item, you would have 3 minutes to do so. Please come to the podium and state your name and let us know where you live. Oh, okay. Seeing none. I will close public comment and bring it back for discussion or a motion.
Now, can I make a motion?
Yes, you may.
Okay. I move we adopt Resolution PC 2010-0006 to allow the removal of two live oaks totaling 13 inches DBH and 28 inches DBH each, subject to the guidelines and mitigation required by the Atascadero Native Tree Ordinance.
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Jack, second by Vice Chairperson Benz. Roll call, please. Commissioner Jack?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Benz?
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
And Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Thank you. Let's move on to the public hearing.
I believe this is my item, so I'll be presenting the staff report. You have the staff report in your packet. It is a proposed ordinance to prohibit the establishment and operation of medical marijuana facilities. We have indicated in the report that there are basically two reasons for the recommendation to you this evening. The first reason is that notwithstanding the Compassionate Use Act of 1996, and the fact that there are some medical marijuana facilities in the state dispensing medical marijuana, that these practices are still in violation of federal law. I believe it was 2 or 3 years ago there was an arrest of a individual who was operating a medical marijuana facility in the city of Morro Bay, and he was prosecuted by the federal government. I am aware that under the current administration that the federal government is not enforcing the federal law. However, the fact that the federal government has chosen not to enforce the federal law does not change the fact that such dispensaries would be in violation of federal law. The second reason why there's a recommendation before you with respect to this ordinance, and you would be proposing this ordinance, that's our recommendation that you make a motion to recommend that the City Council approve the proposed ordinance. Now, the second reason for our recommendation is that there are secondary effects which occur with respect to medical marijuana facilities that have been very well documented in numerous reports. Those negative secondary effects include significant increases in traffic, crime, and noise. And as a matter of fact, this matter was presented to the City Council at its meeting in October of 2009, and at that time I presented a report very similar to the one you're hearing this evening with respect to the justification for an extension of the current city's moratorium on medical marijuana dispensaries. The ordinance that's now before, and at that time in October, the Council referred this matter to the Planning Commission for its review and consideration in terms of an ordinance to ban medical marijuana facilities. Now, since the October 2009 council meeting, there has been additional evidence of medical marijuana facilities and the fact that they do tend to have issues with respect to criminal activity, and that specifically would be in reference to the Santa Barbara experience that's referenced in your packet, where there was an arrest by the Santa Barbara police of a organization referred to as Humanity. And this is at page 41 of your staff report in your packet. There was an owner there and five employees who were arrested. They found that the facility was not checking the identification of customers. They also found in furtherance of that investigation that there were some 281 doses of steroids and 63 pounds of marijuana had been buried in the backyard of one of the operators of that facility. So that was just in last month. So we do have continuing evidence of a history of what I'm calling secondary effects of the medical marijuana facilities in terms of criminal activity, illegal sales occurring, violence occurring, with respect to individuals that are purchasing the marijuana and reselling it. It's all described in further detail in our report, and I'm certainly prepared to amplify on any of these points if it's necessary to respond to any of your questions. So that's the short version. As I said, I'm prepared to respond to any questions that you might have. The recommendation before you this evening is that you do recommend to the City Council the adoption of the proposed ordinance, which would ban medical marijuana facilities. One other point I would mention before you is a PowerPoint, which is a slide showing, well, it's not quite there, but it will be in a moment as soon as my assistant gets together. Thank you, Warren. This slide, which is an illustration of a survey that was conducted in many cities throughout the state. The cities are listed in the first column, and then as you move from left to right, there's different degrees of tolerance or intolerance for medical marijuana facilities. The first column would be permitted use, the second column, discretionary permit, third would be moratorium, fourth would be a prohibition with the use not defined. The next one is a ban, then we go to amortization, and what's that last one, Warren? Other. Okay, hard to see from this angle. As you can see under the column of ban, there's quite a few cities, and this is just the first page of this survey, that do have the ban. The only city on that first page that was had allowed medical marijuana as a permitted use was Berkeley. Can we have the second page, please, Warren? Here I think you see a similar pattern of cities that were surveyed. The survey was conducted by the city of Reading. And it shows, again, most of the cities on this page have a ban. Encinitas has a prohibition based on a use not defined. The city of Laguna Woods, a discretionary permit, and that's the only one on that page where it would be possibly allowed. Next page, please, Warren. Here we have, on this page, no cities where it is a permitted use. You have two cities, well, one city and one county, Millbrae, where it is a discretionary permit, if you could drop down, Warren, San Luis Obispo County, medical marijuana facilities are permitted under a discretionary permit. Again, you can see the multitude of cities on this page that are listed which have a ban or a moratorium. I believe we have one more page, Warren. Here's our last page. We do have a few cities here where it is a permitted use, Visalia. You have two cities where it's a discretionary permit, Santa Cruz and Sebastopol. A moratorium in three of the cities, prohibition under not use not defined in three cities, and then four cities there's a ban. So we could count all these up, but I think you get the sense of it here that the cities in the state, many of them have bans. And as a matter of fact, in San Luis Obispo County, there are no cities which allow medical marijuana facilities. They all either have a ban or a moratorium. And the county of San Luis Obispo, as you saw on our survey, does allow medical marijuana facilities as a discretionary permit. So the ordinance is in your packet, and it basically recites the provisions that under which the medical marijuana facilities would be prohibited, and I believe it's fairly self-explanatory, but again, I can respond to any questions you may have on the ordinance or on the basis for the recommendation before you this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Perrick. Beginning with our ex parte, the commission, all seven of us, received a letter from Richard and Claudia Tantum that is in favor of changing the ordinance and banning the medical marijuana, and it also includes just some information on the drug itself and a prescription drug. And I'm going to hand this to Annette to add with the minutes. It is available for review at the back with the agenda in the binder if anyone would like to take a look at that. Do we have any other ex parte other than this letter? Let's start with Commissioner Schmidt.
Yes, since we've this report has been identified, this presentation has been identified to us as an item that's going to be on our commission, I've talked to numerous people. I actually had a forum at my church. I talked to people at Kiwanis and other organizations, the chamber, the other areas, and I've probably talked to roughly 150 people about the subject.
Are you just sort of general conversation or taking any certain testimony, if you will?
Asking specifically what they on page 2 of the or on page 24 of the staff report, there's the reference to the city council package of October 27th, and in it there's a reference that there were the 19 attachments that were attached to that report. I reviewed those 19 attachments, and the only document that I could find that dealt with related criminal activities with marijuana was the Cerritos police memorandums document that had about 42 articles in it. Is there any other information that was presented to the City Council in October besides that that deals specifically with that issue?
Yes, there were. There was attachment number 1 to that packet, which is the U.S. Department of Justice Drug Enforcement Administration letter of March 31, 2006. There was the white paper, which is attachment 2, medical marijuana dispensaries and associated issues, that was presented to the California Police Chiefs Association from September to December of 2007. There is attachment 3, a white paper on medical marijuana dispensaries, California Police Chiefs Association Task Force on Medical Marijuana 2009, attachment 4, which is a white paper on medical marijuana, the history and current complications, which is the Riverside County District Attorney's Office. There's attachment 13, which I believe is the one you were referencing, which is the El Cerrito Police Department Memorandum on Medical Marijuana. And number 15, which is the City of Norwalk agenda report. And there's the article that I have attached to your staff report from last month, where there was the arrest at the Santa Barbara dispensary.
Yeah. With the last arrest outstanding in this discussion, of the other agencies that you have identified as prohibiting the use, do you know whether they used similar reports that you have identified?
I can say that the cities in San Luis Obispo County all make reference to the so-called secondary effects of medical marijuana facilities. Those are found in the 19 attachments, as we've been calling them. The cities of Grover Beach, Paso Robles, Pismo Beach, Arroyo Grande, and Morro Bay.
So specifically the white papers, the Cerrito study, the attachments that you were referring to?
All of those ordinances make reference to the secondary effects.
Okay.
I wasn't present at those council meetings, so I don't know what information was supplied to those city councils to establish these secondary effects, but I do know what was presented to the Atascadero City Council in October of 2009 in terms of secondary effects, and those are the attachments that I've mentioned here.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Sturdivant.
Yes, I've noticed that the verbiage for this new ordinance is very similar for our cities compared to Norwalk, to Paso Robles, to other cities that were in that initial report to the City Council. Has there been any challenges to that verbiage from any other when these ordinance bans have been put in place?
I'm not aware of any lawsuits that are currently pending with regard to any of the ordinances that you've referenced.
Thank you.
Any other? Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes. Mr. Pirik, I'd just like to make sure that we all understand what we're talking about here with respect to the medical marijuana law of the state of California. There was this legislation adopted, I believe it was 1996, is that correct?
Sorry.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
It's better if I have the microphone on. Yes, it's the Compassionate Use Act of 1996.
And in that legislation, the law made provision for the use of marijuana for medicinal purposes. Is that fair to say?
Well, specifically, codification appears in Health and Safety Code Section 11362.5, and there were certain findings that were made at that time And it was to ensure that the seriously ill were entitled to receive medical marijuana. And then there's other provisions with respect to, based on recommendations from physicians as opposed to a prescription. My understanding of the reason that it's not handled as a prescription is that prescriptions are regulated by the Food and Drug Administration, which would be a federal law. So the state law, the compassionate use, there'd be some regulations on it that I'm not aware of.
So it was left to the professional judgment of the physician, I gather.
Yes, that's the way I understand it.
And then the next part would be, assuming somebody got this kind of a recommendation in a form satisfactory under the law, where would they go to get the marijuana that they were supposedly authorized to get under this law?
Well, there's reference to cooperatives and collectives in some of the sections, and as I understand it, the way those work is you're a member of this cooperative or collective, and that as a result of that membership, you're entitled to receive the medical marijuana. It's also my understanding that the medical marijuana is not to be sold for a profit, however, notwithstanding that that is the way that I believe the law to read, I also understand that there are some facilities which are operating basically as a retail marijuana store and selling marijuana outside of the parameters of the collective or the cooperative.
We've heard references to medical marijuana dispensaries. Now, how are those distinguishable from the collectives or cooperatives that you're talking about?
Well, the word dispensary is not a term that I believe is in the Act or any of its regulations. They use the word cooperatives and collectives. As I understand it, the term dispensary came about as being a location where the marijuana could be obtained. If you'll notice, what I've done in the ordinance is I've defined medical marijuana facilities to include one that is, whether it's fixed or mobile, where medical marijuana is made available to or distributed to any of the following persons, and it goes on in detail to describe that. And also I should mention that it's come to my attention that there are some areas of the state where individuals are delivering marijuana to patients or non-patients. They're delivering marijuana, and I think some of them say they're delivering them to patients with these recommendations. That is not allowed under the law. Notwithstanding that it's not, it's something that is a practice. And I've included in this ordinance a prohibition not only on medical marijuana facilities, but on the delivery of medical marijuana.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. So a cooperative, let's say a cooperative is formed, it cannot then make delivery, like let's say home delivery of marijuana to particular patients. It must have a physical location where those people come to pick it up. Is that
yes.
What the law requires?
Yes.
And then, and that's where we are now. We're saying under local law, whether a physical location can be set up is something that we, in this locality, this municipality, have the authority to approve or not to approve.
That's my opinion, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And it's also the opinion of quite a few other cities, and I assume their attorneys.
Thank you.
Vice Chairperson Bentz.
Yes. Question for our attorney. After Commissioner Colomarino's discussion, a question was brought up in my mind about whether or not we know whether the delivery or the possession of this marijuana actually results in it being distributed to people that aren't entitled to use it. Does that occur?
Well, I don't know. I've never personally observed it, but it's my understanding that there's a risk in your delivery situation that the marijuana could be delivered. Perhaps it's being delivered to a person who is a qualified medical marijuana patient, but you know that person could live with somebody else who's not, and you know how do you enforce it? I mean, there's enforcement issues beyond just what the law says. But it's my opinion and that of, I know, other prosecuting attorneys in the state that the there's no delivery service permitted for medical marijuana.
Thank you.
Commissioner Schmidt.
Yes, I'd like to continue on the information in the attachments and with respect to the white papers and the documentation that you provided from about the federal government. It seemed to me when I was reading that the it was obviously illegal to distribute, sell and distribute marijuana federally. Why the drug is not legal federally?
The reason it's not legal federally is because there's a Federal Controlled Substances Act which says that it's not. And unless and until Congress votes to change that law, that is the federal law.
If it went through the FDA and the FDA said that it could be a legal drug to be used, then would that then overturn that particular aspect that you're discussing?
No, the FDA does not have jurisdiction to change federal law in terms of if the Congress has passed a law, as they did with the Federal Controlled Substances Act, mm-hmm. The FDA could not come in and change that law. They could make a recommendation to the Congress to change the law, but at this point, the federal government has not changed the law, and as a matter of fact, I made reference in the staff report to the fact that there's been some U.S. Supreme Court decisions. I'm on page 33 of the staff report now, where it says at the bottom paragraph that despite the passage of Proposition 215, the United States Supreme Court in the United States versus Oakland Cannabis Buyers Cooperative, 2001-532 U.S. 483, held that the Federal Controlled Substances Act continues to prohibit marijuana use, distribution, and possession, and that no medical necessity exceptions exist to those prohibitions. And then also in 2005, we have another United States Supreme Court decision. I'm now at the bottom of page 33, going to the top of page 34 of your packet, where the United States Supreme Court held that the federal laws which ban the use of marijuana for medical purposes are constitutional. That was decided in the case of Gonzalez versus Reich, 545 U.S. 1.
Yeah, I read those. Thank you.
And so, Mr. Pirick, it basically looks like when you have a federal law and a state law that are in a disagreement, in this case, the federal law takes supremacy over state law. Is that correct?
Well, there is what's known as the Supremacy Clause in the United States Constitution, and if there's a direct conflict between the federal law and the state law, then the federal law would apply. Here we have, and it's part of the reason that we have a problem, is we have a federal law which says that the use of marijuana, possession of marijuana, for medical purposes or otherwise, is illegal. And then you have a state law that says under certain circumstances, if you have the appropriate doctor's recommendation and the other criteria are met, that it is permissible. So you have a conflict going on between the federal and the state law, which has resulted, and I gave the example of the Morro Bay situation, where you could have prosecution of someone in California by federal authorities, even though what they may be doing may or may not be consistent with state law. But the federal authorities are not bound by the state law, and they do have the discretion to pursue it. And as I mentioned previously, beyond the federal-state law conflict issue, there's the secondary effects that I've mentioned that have been widely reported throughout the state that are associated with these facilities.
And so in essence, currently as it stands, the Atascadero ordinance is out of compliance with federal law.
Well, I would just say this, that there's a question about whether or not that ordinance would be permitted under federal law. I'll prefer to not make an affirmative statement that it is, But I can tell you that when I reviewed the ordinances of the city and what the pattern was of other cities, including every other city in this county, which were all coming to the conclusion that they wanted to have a moratorium or a ban on medical marijuana facilities, that I reviewed it and I came to the conclusion that it was recommended that the city of Tascadero join with these multitude of other cities that are prohibiting medical marijuana facilities for the reasons I've said, the conflict with federal law and the secondary effects.
Okay, thank you. All right. We will go ahead and open this up to public comment. When you come to the podium, please let us know your name and your address. You will have 3 minutes, and we ask that you kindly stick to the timeline. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Toni Paradis, P-A-R-A-D-I-S. I live at 8855 Old Santa Rosa Road in Atascadero. I've lived here for 20 years. My son is an Altoid spastic quadriplegic as a result from a near drowning at a daycare center at 2 years old. He has taken numerous medications which make him lethargic, sick, and no longer takes any medication. You've shown have maybe made attempts, but they need to have the community come together and build it to where we can make it work the way it's supposed to work. I know there's government and state law conflicts. However, it upsets me when I can see that there's a methadone clinic here in Atascadero, a needle exchange, and you know these are for drug addicts, not for people that are in pain or suffering for cancer. You know, there are people that are going to take advantage of it. There's people that take advantage of alcohol. You know, there's people that there's not one person that's ever known to die on marijuana. Alcohol, cigarettes, over-the-counter drugs. And one of the reasons that it hasn't passed through the FDA is that it is an herb, and it's kind of hard to regulate it. That's why they want to go through a dispensary, because it cannot go through a pharmacy. The drugs that my son was on would destroy his liver within 10 years. The example I could give you is Christopher Reeves broke his neck. He didn't die from the broken neck. He died from the drugs that he was taking to relieve his pain and his agony. And I just would request that you would consider the people that are out here living the life that do really sincerely need the help with this medication, and not just all the crooks that are out there trying to screw it up for everybody else. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Paradis.
Good evening to the Planning Commission and to all the members of the community. My name is Warren J. Sarvis III. I'm a 30-plus year resident of this county. I have a story to tell you tonight. On December 3rd, 2008, my 75-year-old father was diagnosed with squamous cell cancer. Squamous is a type of skin cancer. My father had to endure 2 surgeries, chemotherapy treatments, as well as radiation treatment. Needless to say, he had a very tough time with all these procedures. At some point, his doctor suggested using medical cannabis. My father, in the end, was able to obtain his medical cannabis, but not in the safest and most secure manners. My vision is for my father and the other people, other patients like him, to be able to obtain their medicine in a safe and secure environment. I want to thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Sarvis.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Darrell Jackson. I'm about a 15-year resident of Atascadero, and I'm about a 25 years resident of the city of San Luis Obispo, county of San Luis Obispo. And what I'm starting to hear is that patients are not going to have chance to have the equal access to the medicine. Medicine. That's what it is. There are plenty of guidelines out there. There are plenty of cities out there who are functioning quite well with this. Just as there is a negative, there is also a positive. But yet we don't hear any positive reinforcements for the public safety, which is citizens, and more could not come out, but yet they're not having a chance to locally go and retrieve their medicine. And the reason why it is a dispensary and not a pharmacy, because it is a Class 1 drug and it has not been changed. Therefore, it cannot be labeled as a pharmacy. They label it as a dispensary. So you have people who have collectives and you cannot transport it, and it is banned in our public city. Where are we to go? How do we get it? Are we left to the other resources that have been out there that now laws in place are now stopping that from happening? So to have it banned, I would have to disagree. I feel a further look should be taken look into this. I'm sure some more positives can be found. And there's also a lot of laws out there, especially from the Department of Justice, Edwin Brown Jr., of August 2008, Guidelines for the Security and Non-Diversion of Medical Marijuana Grows for Medical Use. I have about a minute and 14 minutes left, but basically I just want to state this one simple line. Taxability of medical marijuana transactions. In February 2007, the California State Board of Equalization issued a special notice confirming that its policies of taxing medical marijuana transactions, as well as its requirements that businesses engage in such transactions as holding a seller.
Mr. Parrick mentioned. My understanding of the collectives might be a little bit different than his own. The way I understand it, a collective is operating as a not-for-profit organization that allows patients to receive medication. I read the Attorney General's guideline, and my understanding of that document is that it allows a collective to own, possess, transport, and deliver medical marijuana to patients. So I believe that completely banning medical marijuana for this area, you'd basically be banning the medical marijuana collectives. I also see that in 1996, the voters were aware that marijuana was a Class 1 substance, and it was illegal. But looking at some of the marijuana clubs that were operating in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and those areas, they got tired of seeing cancer patients, seriously ill people, being discriminated against, arrested, and maltreated by law enforcement because of those laws. It's been a long time from then until now. Currently, if you look around, there are 13 states that have passed medical marijuana laws. Various cities have passed marijuana ordinances, basically allowing dispensaries to operate. In those cities, you see actually a reduction in crime in many of them. A lot of the statistics that Mr. Parrick is quoting come from the white pages. I've had a chance to look at these. They're very different statistics that you'll see from people on the other side of the argument. One of the issues is, like, if you look at Oakland, downtown Oakland was crime-ridden, just strife, bad things happening everywhere. And then what had happened was they allowed medical marijuana dispensaries in, Oaksterdam University opened up. Pretty soon you saw downtown turn around from a crime-ridden, just beat-up neighborhood to places where the rates on rents have risen, new businesses came back into the town, and the whole area was turned around. So it's not all gloom and doom, as some people might like to show it as. I don't know whether or not medical marijuana makes sense for Atascadero. I know that Morro Bay, in their last city council meeting, put forward a draft of an ordinance that allows two dispensaries to open up within their city. They're saying that within a month they'll have the completion of that, and they will allow dispensaries to open up in Morro Bay. What I would like to see happen with this decision that you're going to make is I would actually like to see you put off making a recommendation to the City Council for a period so that we can look more into that issue, so that more members of the general public are able to look at the findings of the staff report and make an informed decision about how they feel. And that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Donnell.
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Linda Hill. I'm a 30-year resident of the county. To follow up on Rich's comments, 13 states plus California, total of 14. I am currently retired, but the majority of my working life here was spent working in and with the criminal justice system. I'd like to refer to the secondary effects. I'm looking at your report and citing the phrase, would limit the negative secondary effects, including significant increases in traffic, crime, and noise, which medical marijuana facilities could have. Looking at the one example that we've been able to look at experientially in San Luis Obispo County, i.e. Morro Bay, no problems with traffic, no problems with crime, including an excellent working reputation and relationship with the Morro Bay Police Department, under which jurisdiction that dispensary was operating, despite the raid out of his jurisdiction by the county sheriff's office. No noise problems right in the middle of downtown. I would concur again with Rich. Please, I would urge you, look at the Morro Bay staff report. Give this more consideration. You can be hardline and rigid and go along with this block of cities, or you can be more compassionate, to use a common word in this context, more open-hearted, open-spirited, and mindful of the needs of serving people who are ill. And with this ban, would not only be further victimized, but even persecuted as criminals under misdemeanor prosecution. So I personally strongly advise that you adopt alternative 3. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Hill. Is there anyone else wishing to speak on this item?
With respect to, let's call it best practices by cooperatives and collectives to try to limit the distribution of marijuana to only those that are qualified. The reality is that, as reflected in several of the papers that I've referenced here this evening, there is a substantial risk of secondary effects. One of the speakers mentioned that the report said secondary effects that medical marijuana facilities could have. Yes, I used the word could. However, that is intended to suggest that you never know with certainty exactly what is going to happen at any point in time at any place. But we do know that throughout the state, the medical marijuana facilities have a significant history of having substantial amounts of criminal activity associated with them, burglaries, armed robberies, sale of the drugs to persons under 18, to persons who are not medically qualified to receive the marijuana. There's a long list of the types of conduct that has occurred surrounding these medical marijuana facilities. I mentioned the Santa Barbara experience from last month. And there are multitudes of examples. I mentioned the city of Norwalk's experience specifically in the report to the council, where there were, and this is page 37 of your packet, there were street-level deals trying to sell marijuana to those going to the dispensary at lower prices. There were people smoking marijuana in public around the facilities. There were burglary attempts at the dispensary building. There were street criminals in search of drugs who were robbing medical use patients. There were thefts and robberies around the location. There were complaints that there were other illegal drugs that were being sold inside the dispensaries or around the dispensaries. So I think it's very well documented that the medical marijuana facilities are a source of what I've called secondary effects, criminal activity. Traffic is a subjective term as to whether or not it's going to, how much it's going to increase traffic. Certainly, there's going to be some traffic with people driving to the facility, but I would say that a greater concern, obviously, is the increase in criminal activity and some of it very significant violent criminal activity that is dangerous to the public. And part of the city's responsibility, in my view, is to provide for the safety of its citizens. And unless and until there is a
better system in place. There's a reconciliation between federal and state law as to the rules governing the use and sale of medical marijuana. And until there's a better way of controlling these secondary effects, I think the city of Atascadero should join every other city in this county and many cities throughout the state in having an ordinance which bans medical marijuana facilities. The other speakers, one of them made reference to obtaining marijuana. I think this was the second speaker, said he made reference to his father having medical marijuana, and then he said that one of his goals was to have a situation where you could obtain medical marijuana in a safe and secure environment. Well, the fact is that that's not what exists now. Medical marijuana facilities have a history of the criminal activity that I've described, and it could hardly be considered safe and secure. So I think I've addressed all of the comments by the speakers.
Mr. Donald did mention something about Morro Bay allowing two dispensaries, but I thought that they had a ban on it as well. Is there something new that you're familiar with?
Well, they had a ban in October, so unless they've done something since October that I don't know about, but even if, frankly, even if the other cities in the county, some one or more of them should come to a different conclusion based on what their city attorney or staff or councils or planning commissions decide, I think that each city has to make its own judgment. I'm not suggesting that you go along with the crowd. I'm not suggesting that you adopt this ordinance just because several other cities have one. The justification, as I have mentioned now many times this evening, in my opinion, for having this ordinance is that you have a conflict between federal and state law, and there are negative secondary effects to the medical marijuana facilities. And I think the reason that many of these cities have these ordinances are because of those two facts. And if you look at the ordinances, that's what they say in terms of their findings, that they concluded that the fact that there's a conflict with federal law and there's negative secondary effects support their decisions, and I think it would support yours as well.
Thank you, Mr. Parrick. And I will remind the commission that what Mr. Parrick has just talked about, that really is what lies within the purview of the commission tonight, is realizing that, okay, with the federal law, the secondary effects, and so we're from a planning standpoint looking at it and saying, is this right for our community? We're not here to debate policy or legalities. That's not really within our purview. So let's go ahead and start with Commissioner Schmidt.
The crimes are associated with the dispensary of pot. Bellflower. A man who claims he grows pot for self-medication shoots a teenager when the boy breaks into his house before daybreak. As a side note, the teen's brother is charged with murder under the state's felony murder rule. Pittsburgh. Man is slain after four men break into his home. Man's son says he grows pot for medicinal use. Police explore nexus between robbery at home and the possession of controlled substances. Glen Cove. Two men killed in home where high volume of pot is grown. Claremont, pot stolen from unlicensed dispensary. Having dispensaries can place an additional burden on police. San Bruno, pot found being grown in home. Police state hall wasn't unusual. Denver, pot advocate who grows pot in home for himself and others is shot at home. Lathrop, large quantities of pot are being grown in suburbs. South Lake Tahoe, three men arrested for growing pot. One is a self-described caregiver. Roseville, pot operation found in home run by gang. Eureka, firefighters discover pot being grown in home after responding to a call. Oceanside, fire in a home caused by electrical overload associated with high volume of grow operation. Apple Valley, utility scam associated with the growing of pot in a home. West Sacramento, $6 million in pot seized. Oakland, pot ring busted. Bakersfield, man busted for growing pot in home. Georgia, 40 homes raided. Toronto, hotline set up to combat grow ops. Ontario, grow op criminals booby trap home to catch persons trying to steal pot. Northern California County, the growth in the number of home grow ops increases since Prop 215. England, child taken into protective services from parents who are growing pot in home. L.A., DEA cracking down on dispensaries. an owner of a nonprofit clinic, deposits $2.3 million in bank. San Francisco, DEA targets pot dispensaries. West Hollywood, DEA raids outlets. Claremont, owner dispensary fined for operating without a business license. Los Angeles, city council seeks moratorium on clinics. Santa Cruz, sellers finding loopholes in Prop 215. Santa Clarita, there's an opinion piece that basically states not to permit dispensaries for the same reasons that we're discussing tonight. Whittier, police report seeing state's pot law being abused but claim they are powerless to stop it. England, newspaper apologizes for supporting the decriminalization of pot. Britain, 50% of youth committing crimes admit to smoking pot. Alaska, pot is addictive, might be a gateway. American Academy of Ophthalmology group states that there is no scientific evidence that pot helps glaucoma. American Medical Association group supports smoke-free inhale system for pot for health reasons. Institute of Medicine, because of health risks associated with smoke, pot should not be recommended for long-term use. New York, pot laws have given a false impression that growing pot is safe and legal. Oregon, police are most worried about the misuse of the state's new law permitting medical pot, but are not concerned about those having legitimate needs. California, how does someone acquire a pot card? Santa Cruz, why has state created a medical pot system that is so easily corrupted? L.A., mushrooming industry in Southland. San Fernando Valley, the writer opines that he uses pot for medicinal reasons, declares that his tolerance is low, that pot should be legal as a pain reliever, and that state's distribution laws need to be improved. When I went through these, I was actually kind of surprised. I thought that I would find more statistical information, evidence that would support the secondary effects. What I did think that I found was that most of these crimes that are being cited here are people who just choose to break the law. And then little to none had to do with medical marijuana dispensaries. And most had to do with pot being grown in homes, as it went over and over again about houses and suburbs and so on. So, I'm just concerned that if we're going to base this ordinance on this information and some of the other that has been presented, I don't think it's strong enough to support the ordinance. And if someone wants to challenge the fact that the factual basis for the secondary effects isn't supported, and I'm concerned about that. And I would like to send this back and see if staff can come back with better information than what has been presented.
Heather?
Commissioner Colomarino.
Could I ask Commissioner Schmidt to just make it...
Could I mention, I don't know if the commissioner was finished with his comments. In addition to the El Cerrito information, which I thought that many of the ones that were read did make reference to problems with medical marijuana dispensaries, when I was asked the question earlier this evening about what other attachments there were that did document the history of criminal activity and its association with medical marijuana dispensaries, I made reference to the attachments to the report that was submitted to the City Council in October of 2009, and that report was the one, the white paper on marijuana dispensaries by the California Police Chiefs Association Task Force on Marijuana Dispensaries. That was attachment 3. And if I could, I'd like to just make reference to a couple of the excerpts from that report. It appeared at page 102 of the staff report under the heading of Armed Robberies and Murders, and I'm quoting, "Throughout California, many violent crimes have been committed that can be traced to the proliferation of marijuana dispensaries. These include armed robberies and murders. For example, as far back as 2002, two home occupants were shot in Willits, California, in the course of a home invasion robbery targeting medical marijuana. and a series of four armed robberies of a medical marijuana dispensary in Santa Barbara occurred through August 10th of 2006, in which $30 and 15 baggies filled with marijuana were on display were taken by force and removed from the premises in the latest holdup. The owner said he failed to report the first three robberies because, quote, medical marijuana is such a controversial issue. I'm continuing. On February 25, 2004, in Mendocino County, two masked thugs committed a home invasion robbery to steal medical marijuana. They held a knife to a 65-year-old man's throat, and though he fought back, they managed to get away with large amounts of marijuana. Near Haywood, California, September 2, 2005, upon leaving a medical marijuana dispensary, a patron of the CCA Cannabis Club had a gun put to his head as he was relieved of over $250 worth of pot. 3 weeks later, another break-in occurred at the Garden of Eden Cannabis Club in September of 2005. Another known medical marijuana dispensary-related murder occurred on November 19, 2005. Approximately six gun and bat-wielding burglars broke into Les Crane's home in Laytonville, California, while yelling, "This is a raid." Les Crane, who owned two storefront marijuana businesses, was at home and shot to death. He received gunshot wounds to his head, arm, and abdomen. Another man present at the time was beaten with a baseball bat. The murderers left the home, taking an unknown sum of U.S. currency and a stash of processed marijuana. Now, I could go on for a long time this evening to cite to passages from these attachments that are very similar in nature, but I think that I hopefully have made my point here that medical marijuana facilities, this is not something that is a safe environment. There are multiple reports of crimes that have occurred at these facilities, and these are crimes of a dangerous nature, violent nature. And obviously, many communities, including all those, all the cities in this county, have come to the conclusion that those medical marijuana facilities are not ones that they want in their community. So, I think it would be advisable to give serious consideration to these secondary effects. And the fact is that they do occur. They occur with frequency. And while we can't ever say with 100% certainty that they would occur here, there's a substantial risk, and the question is whether or not that's a risk that the city of Atascadero is willing to run.
Thank you. Commissioner Ward.
Yes, thank you. Having two sons in their mid-30s, I've been in the middle of this marijuana debate for years, and accordingly I have followed newspaper articles, magazines, reporting situations in towns like this that have medical marijuana facilities. Now, I've read about the horror stories, but I'd like to just focus on one thing. I cannot and can't recall ever reading an article, hearing anybody make a positive statement that said the marijuana facility in such and such enough, and I think I'm ready to call a question and have us vote on this.
Let me see if there's any other discussion. There isn't, not yet. Commissioner Colomarino.
Yes, I find this subject a very troubling one. I too am concerned about the quality of the evidence that we've been hearing. I also am wondering about the situation where the city attorney is put in a position where he's basically presenting a political argument. I understand the point about the conflict of federal and state law, and it's good to have an attorney deal with that, and also it's good to have the city attorney explain how the state law works and things like that. I'm wondering, though, about situation in which the city attorney is here as a proponent of blanket prohibition based upon the kind of evidence that we're hearing about, basically newspaper headlines and things like that. We've all seen so many sensationalist newspaper stories, much less headlines, over the years that it's hard to give much credence to those, especially in a quasi-judicial proceeding. On the other hand, we undoubtedly are dealing with a very controversial and troublesome subject. And those of us who came of age in the 1960s have been dealing with this culture war issue pretty much our whole lives. And I look at this legislation that we're dealing with here in California, enacted in 1996, and it seems as though there may have been two forces behind it. One was the very well-intentioned effort to help persons who could benefit from medicinal use of marijuana. I think another force behind it was the marijuana legalization groups. And unfortunately, the legislation that came out has failed both sides, I think, both of the groups that proposed it. Now, I guess part of the problem is that the dispensaries could not just be in normal pharmacies, although that's still not clear to me why. We have these single-purpose marijuana dispensaries, and because they only serve that single purpose, then they become, I guess, magnets for anyone who's looking to get their hands on this largely illegal substance. If these dispensaries were attached somehow to facilities that had other legitimate business purposes, perhaps we wouldn't have seen this failure. If, for example, we see how alcohol is sold in places that sell a lot of other things. Now, you know, you could put up a list of crimes committed near liquor stores, and that list would go on and on and on, but nobody says liquor stores should not be allowed. But alcohol is sold, at least in this state, in stores that sell a lot of other things, and we don't have those problems. If that had been the way it had been done with marijuana, maybe we wouldn't be faced with this problem. But the experience shows that the facilities that dispense the facilities that dispense the medical marijuana have, in fact, been the site of some problems. And while the evidence, I don't think, is of a very good quality, I don't think that this community is ready to take a leadership role in this matter. That's my sense of the community. And I think somebody, if we authorize the opening of a medical marijuana dispensary here, I don't think the community would receive it well. I'm not sure it would work out very favorably for all parties concerned. And then at the same time, Atascadero would be carrying the ball for the whole county here. No other city has stepped forward to do anything, and it doesn't seem that Atascadero is the ideal candidate to be in the forefront on this issue. So for those reasons, my inclination is to support the proposed prohibition with regret about how it's going to affect the some of the people we've heard from tonight and others in the community who have legitimate and compelling needs to get this.
I have to say that with everything that's been presented, I'm willing to accept the staff's recommendation and move ahead with it. Thank you.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes, I have a brother who is seriously, he has extreme serious health issues, and I'm very sensitive to the fact that people who need, he needed medical marijuana, he could not get it. It was very difficult, but that was what happened in his case. And in this case, I want people that need it, truly need it, to have the opportunity to get it safely and securely. But in this town, I just don't think it's a good fit for Atascadero. It doesn't mean that the county is open. I mean, there's Templeton, there's Santa Margarita, there's any town that fits within the county that it's open to be able to process or go through the process to have a dispensary. So making this decision for our town, which is not a good fit, doesn't mean that there could not be a safe and secure place somewhere else. So I would like to see those who truly need it get it, but I just don't believe that our town is the best fit for that.
Commissioner Schmidt.
Yeah, and you make the points have been made have been excellent points. And then right now I think the county is looking at a dispensary in Napomo, and it's going through a process right now. I'm interested in knowing that is if we can think of any ways to deal with the secondary effects that have been presented that are valid. One of the things kind of joked in my mind when I thought about it is why don't we allow dispensaries to be only within 500 feet of the police department. And so if it was that close, how many people who are there for illegal activity would hang out there because it's 500 feet from the police department? We have a document in our community right now. It's called the TASUG study, in which it was found several years ago that residential development doesn't pay its fair share. And so there's an additional tax that's placed on homes that have been built in single-family lots that roughly amounts to $400 to $500 a year that they have to pay for police and fire services because the property taxes doesn't pay their fair share for those services. So if we were to allow a dispensary, could we condition an applicant to prepare such a similar study as a TASOG study to see what the costs are associated to protecting the public from the secondary effects? And then set up a district similar to what we have for single-family homes for a dispensary, so they would have to pay those monies to get the police support or the fire support that's needed. So those are some of the things that are going through my mind. I have a really tough time limiting use of property. And another thing that kind of passed through my mind, I mean, I could argue that McDonald's is not good for you too, and so should we limit eating at a McDonald's because it's bad for your health? And in a sense, people are giggling, but I mean, in our politically correct society, I mean, that is not unreasonable. And I have a very difficult time with putting limitations on land use. With that said, however, I'm interested in knowing that if the majority or that's going to be sounds like they're going to be supporting the recommendation, would be interested in putting a recommendation that there be a sunset or some type of limitation on the prohibition, so that if in the future the state law is tightened up and the corruptive nature of it is less, federal government might change their laws, that this is something that could be revisited at a certain time if those changes do occur.
I would think, and maybe Mr. Perrick, you can speak to this, that if there's nothing that the commission would specifically have to condition in that sense, but that if the federal law was changed, then someone could bring that before the city to look at changing that again. Is that the case?
The answer is yes. The fact that you, let's assume that you make the recommendation to the council this evening and assume they adopt it and it goes into effect, the ordinance could be rescinded or amended in the future in similar fashion.
Okay, thank you. And yes, Commissioner Jack.
I move that the city attorney the Planning Commission adopt Resolution PC 2010-005 recommending that the City Council introduce an ordinance.
A study, resources that Atascadero would need to spend on doing something like that. We don't have those resources right now. And I would be very remiss, I think, in trying to recommend that we spend any resources on that at the moment. So with that, any other discussion? Roll call, please, Annette.
Commissioner Jack?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Vince?
Yes.
Commissioner Colmarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes, and I would like to say that I appreciate the conversation that we've had tonight, and I think we hashed it out rather well. And I do think that there might be a time and place for this in our community, but now is not it. And Mr. Colmarino identified that so poignantly, and I appreciate that.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Thank you, Annette. All right, it is time for our commissioner comments and reports. Why don't we start to my left? Any commissioner comments and reports? No. Commissioner Ward?
Yes. There is a project that the Marine Corps League has been working on for the last 2 years in conjunction with Assemblyman Blakesley's office, and that was the enactment of a law in the state legislature to designate the 115-mile section of Highway 101 as part of the nation's and the National Purple Heart Trail. Tim Haley, past Commandant of Marine Corps League, has been the father of this. I'm assisting him. We've had several meetings with Caltrans. We've reached an agreement on the placement of signs. We've reached a contract with the sign company. And very shortly, we'll be out raising funds. This will be supported all through public donations. And there will be two signs put up on Highway 101 on either side of the Highway 40 exit. And there will be eight other signs along Highway 101. And this will give a strong identification to the various significant veteran memorials and museums along this corridor. Along with this, we're going to be publishing a special brochure. I've been meeting with Main Street on that, and we're going to fund that and distribute hundreds of copies to the various chambers of commerce and tourist bureaus. And there'll be some articles of this in the newspaper, and I'm very excited. This is something that has real substance to it. And the Faces of Freedom Veterans Memorial is going to be right smack dab in the middle of this, and I think it's going to create a lot of foot traffic and car traffic to this memorial. And in line with this, there's an item on the City Council agenda, the next City Council meeting, to petition the county to officially recognize and perhaps designate that the Faces of Freedom Veterans Memorial here in Atascadero be recognized as the official Veterans Memorial for the county. And I've been, others, collecting letters from various veteran organizations, and I invite you to come to the City Council meeting on 23rd and chime in on it if you have an opinion. And also, if you feel like making a donation, that would be very nice and well received, although I'm not making the pitch on that tonight. But that's something that you're going to hear about, and I thought it was appropriate to sort of lay out a little of this tonight.
Thank you, Commissioner Ward. Yes. Commissioner Jack?
Warren, could you give us a status report on the pending projects around the city right now?
Certainly. Walmart project, we are still waiting on resubmittal there. I have been in contact with the applicants both for Walmart and the Annex project, and they are working on their final revisions to the plans. I do expect them to be resubmitted this month, but they have not come in yet. The La Plaza Theater project, which is the second theater across from the Sunken Gardens, they resubmitted plans last week, so those are in a review process. We'll be meeting with the applicants early next week to review that. We're trying to get that to the Commission as soon as possible. That'll be a use permit. The Colony Square Theater is obviously under construction moving forward.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Commissioner Schmidt.
Yes, I was blessed this past week. I heard a presentation on sacred honor, and it was presented at our Kiwanis meeting. And a gentleman talked about the writing of the Constitution and the signers of the Constitution and went over individuals who we normally don't hear about. You know, obviously the Jeffersons and the Franklins we hear, but it went over some of the other people. And the little facts that we don't know about these people, for instance, within 1 or 2 years, many of them were killed. Many of them, one man had 13 kids, never saw them again for the rest of his life. Others lost their fortunes because they signed that document. And it was just a tremendous, tremendous presentation, and to see what people gave up and what we need to, as citizens and as school people, as children on our campus, they need to understand that. And it was a beautiful, beautiful presentation. And so, anyway, thank you.
Thank you. I've seen a similar presentation. It's very moving and makes you incredibly grateful. Director, a report?
Yes, thank you. Next meeting will be March 2nd. Right now we have a use permit for a bed and breakfast scheduled for that meeting. So we'll be getting that report out to you later next week. And some other items that are coming up on the council agenda. The council will be discussing the printery building, the possibility of mothballing, which is the technical term for basically putting the building into a secure state so it won't deteriorate and won't be subject to vandalism, that sort of thing. So that's on the next council agenda. There's also been a lot of discussion in the community about a mural that was painted on the south end of town. That will also be on the council agenda. We're going to be talking about potentially adjusting some of the city fees. So that'll be a discussion. And then the landscape ordinance, the council adopted that at their last meeting. That's a new ordinance that will apply to all construction projects that will put limits on basically the amount of turf that can be in a landscape area without having to do a special set of what they call landscape documentations to justify additional turf areas and special landscaping. So you'll start to see that discussed probably in some of your Planning Commission staff reports as a standard condition of approval. That didn't come through the Planning Commission because it wasn't an amendment to the zoning ordinance. It actually exists in the local building code, which isn't part of the zoning ordinance. That's why you didn't see the landscape ordinance, but as the projects come back through the Planning Commission, you'll see discussions of that, and it'll be part of our standard conditions in the future. That'll conclude my report.
Thank you. And with that, we are adjourned.